comedians are said to be courageous, but who knew that a comedian could find his voice behind bars? During his 6 years of incarceration, Ali Sadiq cultivated the art of entertaining through comedy by sharing his funny stories and opinions with his fellow inmates. And today on the show, we have Mr. Ali Sadiq. We interviewed him at the House of Comedy on High Street in Phoenix, Arizona, before his show at the House of Comedy. And Ali is just an all-around great guy. He did do those 6 years in prison, and he has really turned his life into a positive, and he's doing amazing things out there. He's touring the country. You know him from his comedy specials on Comedy Central. He's from Houston, Texas. He actually told me he's adopting a block in his hometown of Houston, Texas. They even named a day after him because he's doing so much good charity work there. It was really fun to sit down with him and talk to him, so you're going to enjoy this interview today. But first, let me tell you about Goodness Unlimited. Goodness Unlimited is more than a t-shirt brand. It is a movement. Their mission is to promote goodness in the world. Goodness in thoughts, words, and actions can transform ourselves and our world for the better. Together, we can make a positive impact. Become part of the Goodness Unlimited movement. Visit us at goodnessunlimited.com and follow us on Instagram at goodness_UNLTD and tap into the endless stream of goodness. We're really happy to have Goodness Unlimited on board as our sponsor. Again, go to goodnessunlimited.com, get some of their awesome t-shirts and hats. They are a family-run business right here in Phoenix with a really great message, spreading goodness in the world. Okay, guys, here he is, Mr. Ali Sadiq. Going deep backstage, my name is Billy Harfash. We're here at High Street in Phoenix, Arizona at the House of Comedy. I got a special guest, Ali Sadiq. Ali, thanks for taking a couple minutes.
Man, thanks, man. Going deep.
Going deep. We're going to go deep. I'm warning you, man.
This sounds like a porno podcast.
Well, we'll see where it goes. This podcast can go in all different ways. Listen, man, when I look at your stand-up specifically and I see you on stage, the one thing that pops out at me is confidence. So I got to ask, like, where did you find your funny?
Watching, mostly from my family. You know, my family on both sides are pretty confident people. But this is a funny thing. Because people say I'm confident, but I don't think that I am like that. The most confident people in the world are the birthday singers, restaurants.
like Carrabba's?
Yeah.
The Olive Garden singers?
Like the dude who, like, everybody's eating, eggs buzz out. Hey, everybody, it's Tina's birthday. That dude is very confident.
So okay.
I used to watch that dude. Like, this dude is amazing.
Man.
He's commanding this whole room. I'm trying to eat, but I'm singing happy birthday.
So you don't look at yourself as a confident person? I mean, there's a difference between being privately funny, me with the guys having a couple beers, versus on stage here in front of everybody. There's a big difference there.
Yeah, it is. I think that I'm more interested.
Storytelling.
Yeah, I think I'm more interested. People find me interesting.
That's okay. More interesting.
Than confident. I think people find me more interesting.
Your special last year, I think it was released last February. It's bigger than these bars.
February 23rd.
You, now, can people find that, or was that just on Comedy Central?
Just on Comedy Central, man.
When are you going to get that thing on Netflix? Can we rebrand or something?
As soon as Comedy Central releases it. It's like, it's a thing, man. We keep getting them to run it. You know, we gotta keep fighting to run it. It seems odd to have to fight a network that's centered around comedy
right.
to run a comedy special. But you know, they have all this other programming, so.
Right. Because Netflix seems to be growing through comedy at the moment, at least. These specials are getting bigger and bigger, or maybe I'm wrong.
I think Netflix is more of people having their own demand. They can watch it when they want to. You know, even with people specials that may not be that good, they'll watch it because they can, or they'll turn it on at least.
Sure.
You know, watch a couple minutes of it and then, you know, go to something else. It's the demand of it. They can watch it when they want to, as many times as they want to. You know, I think that's what I find very interesting.
Well, I hope the special does get out there sometime soon, and all the networks, Hulu, Netflix, whatever, however you can get it out there, because you know, you film it, you shot it in a prison, right? Yes. And there's a story behind that. We this podcast can turn into 5 hours if we got into the whole story. But talk a little bit about, like, you in prison, when you were in prison, telling jokes. That takes, like, you got to be Teflon, right?
That's the thing.
I mean, by the way, I don't mean during the special. I mean, you were in prison.
Yeah, in prison.
Yeah, there's a difference between...
Yeah, I was incarcerated.
Right.
The thing is that my humor is not, you know, like slapstick. So me telling jokes, remember, or you may not remember, like, I'm one of them kids that was on the bus, you know, talking about people, because, you know, people was talking about me, so I was you know, retaliating. So in prison, it was mostly like that. It was like I would be saying humorous things that people could relate to, because I say it all the time, because I don't want people to think that it's like a comedy program in there, like they can go there and stuff. Hey, what a comedy program. It's no stage. So I would just, the atmosphere that I was in, whether it was at work, you know, whether it was on the block, whether it's on the rec yard, you know, if I'm sitting there watching a game, watching somebody play ball, I'm commentating the game. I'm just saying what I'm hearing people find it funny. It's like, I practice a lot in the barbershop. Like, I don't really go to open mics. I just go to the barbershop because it's the same atmosphere as when I was inside. You know, it's just a room and people just in there. And if I get your attention, what I'm talking about, then I won.
People, comics and storytellers specifically, I think as you're talking, I'm thinking about Joey Diaz. I'm a huge Joey Diaz fan. I saw him last week in Tucson. They have incredible life experiences. Yes. You know, you doing time, telling jokes in the barbershop. Do you think that a lot of your talent is a product of just being a funny guy, like genetics, or do you think it's a product of where you grew up in Houston and the people you were around?
I think part of the people I was around.
Okay.
Mostly, yeah, it's not genetics, because, you know, a lot of people, my family not funny. But
I hope they don't see
it. It's the thing of being in the atmosphere. You know, like, my uncle's a funny dude because he's in the same atmosphere that I was in, you know, and I could see it. You know, you have to be in certain positions and be lighthearted about things to know something that's funny. You know, if you in a shootout and it seems like it's not funny, but somebody in that position will say something like, your boy is like, man, I don't think we're going to make it. You're like, don't say that.
Don't say that. So keeping it light, even in a shootout.
Hey, man, don't say that, man. Don't say that we're not going to make it.
Oh, man.
That's not the wishes that we want. So,
interesting. Man. Very interesting. Now that you're in the public eye and you're touring the country, you're on television, we could list your resume. You're not living the same life that you used to. You're a known figure now. Do you still have those crazy moments to draw on, or are you continually drawing from your past?
Man,
do you understand what I'm saying?
No, I am definitely still drawing from right now.
You still have wild nights, the whole thing?
Wild nights still. it's a weird thing that my wildness is consisted of sometimes it's my kids, you know, just having something with my oldest daughter is 20, and that's a whole thing in itself.
Mm.
You know, being a father and being on the road is, you still gone. You know, you there, you know, she know you can call you, but when something happens.
Right.
You know, she got attacked by a pit bull massive last year, and it was very traumatic for me. And my road manager, he wasn't on the road with me, but he was in Houston, so he got there. And I was like, yo, man, how she doing? And she passed gas next to me. He was like, man, she all right, man. She ain't there passing gas.
She's sitting there farting. She's cool.
And he was telling, he said, hey, you better tell your boyfriend to do something about that dog before your dad get back. And so when I got back, my daughter called me and said, Daddy, you're not going to believe this. The dog died.
Oh.
He had a seizure and died.
Come on.
It's like as soon as my plane landed.
Wow.
And I said, yeah, he heard I was here.
my
daughter's like, you are insane.
Oh,
like,
wait.
I'm like, yo,
the
man,
plane touched down. Ali's daddy's home.
He's like, yo, he's like, I'm
dog's gone.
He's home.
Ali, something incredible happened. I was, I'm a huge fan of shows and podcasts, specifically Joe Rogan, Ari Shaffir, these type of guys. When I receive a compliment from somebody that's in my line of work, It's like it gives me wings. Like when I get a compliment from someone, especially someone that I look up to,
it's like
if I got a compliment from one of my colleagues that I look up to today, I feel better. I feel more energized even right now in this interview. You got compliments from Ari Shaffir and Joe Rogan on one of the biggest, I mean, I don't care how you measure it, one of the biggest shows in the world. What is that like? Like when you heard that, they're shouting you out on the Joe Rogan Experience. They're talking about you. They're talking about how you're an amazing storyteller. I mean, what did you think when you heard that?
Actually, somebody sent it to me.
Oh, you mean you weren't listening?
I wasn't even. I was in the middle of doing something, and then God sent it to me, and I was like, wow. I was still wild that they mentioned me on the show. And I remember Ari, how I got on the show. This is not happening. Ari actually didn't know me at all, so he wasn't like, oh, that's not, I don't know him, so I don't really want him. And Eric Abrams, one of the producers of the show, created the show, he was like, no, you gotta have him. You gotta trust me. So I came to the show.
So Ari didn't know you before they booked you on This Is Not Happening?
No, he didn't know
me. Because you would think, from an outsider looking in, he knows all the comics.
He knew everybody else but me.
So you got a recommendation, obviously, from the producer. And what happened? Obviously, you crushed it on the show.
I was like, I'm still his favorite story.
That's cool.
It was weird because he was doing the show 2 years on the internet prior to getting on the network.
Yeah.
So when I came back, when he introduced me like that, I was like, what? And so when I did another story, he was like, it's like you like your designated hitter.
Man.
And then I came back and I did, before I did this third season with Roy Woods.
Right.
A friend of Roy's, friend with Ari, friend with Eric. So
Roy took over this, right?
Yeah.
He does the show now.
He does the show now.
Right.
And I was up in the air. Was I going to do it or not? So I called Ari first and Ari was like, yo, man, go ahead, knock it out. But
damn.
I did a show. I did a story that pertained to Ari.
Do you get extra butterflies or anything like that when you know it's going to be televised? Or maybe you don't. Do they only televise like the good stories, or do they televise?
When you go on the show, they televise and all.
So
of
you
them.
Know you're on. I mean, it's not like
you know.
It's not like tonight. It's not going to be on television, right? So
it's
are you
the same
getting
feeling.
The same feeling?
Same, it's the same.
You're in front of people.
Yeah, I have a healthy respect for an audience.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm antsy. That's why I'm so weirded out when people come to a show and disrupt a show.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm too grown. It is very irritating to me. It's like you are an adult.
Yeah.
And so you think that another adult wanted to hear whatever you talking. They didn't pay to see you.
No.
So that bothers me quite a bit.
Isn't that just alcohol though, really? Isn't it?
I think it's just people.
Just people.
I think it's just people. I don't think it's alcohol at all. Because that would be me giving them an excuse.
Okay.
So you don't know if you can't handle your liquor either.
Okay. It's two times as bad.
Like two things. Like you definitely not.
Right, right. You're up here doing your art. You're sharing. You're giving your all, and then some idiot in the yelling stuff. Yeah.
I go to shows as well. So I've never been in a show looking at the performer and wanting to say anything.
No.
Like
no,
nothing.
Never. Even if they're bad.
Even if they're bad, I'm gonna just get up and leave.
Right.
If I feel like they're not doing well, I'm like, okay.
Right. Yeah.
But I've never been in a play. I don't even sing along at concerts. I didn't come in. it's like, no, that's your job, sir.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't ever put the mic towards me and think I'm going to say anything. I'm
like,
you're going to be on your own. It's going to be crickets.
Yeah. People say, like, who sings that song? Like, Prince. Well, keep it that way.
Let Prince sing
the song. Yeah. I got it. Listen, Ali, we're going to let you out of here, but you did note the show is called Going Deep, and it's not a porno show, but it's going deep up here, okay? So I want to finish with this. I'm going to read something to you. I am mentally and physically tough. I have been tried and tested. I am always ready for whatever. I have lost so much, so I always warn people. I only possess half of a heart. I care, but then I don't. So today and every day, tell your people how much they mean. I try not to die alone. Do you know who wrote that?
Yeah.
You wrote that. Where does that come from? What is that?
I was having some conversation with people. I think it was during the time of Anthony Bourdain and Kate Spade.
Yeah.
Kate Spade. And I was trying to explain to people that you should talk to people that's close to you. And to understand what they're going through. You know, a lot of times I may seem okay, but I don't be in the best state of mind sometimes. So when people push a limit, I'm talking about it could be something small. It could be something very small, like in a line. If I ask you to scoot back, I'm thinking that's the courteous thing to do. I feel like you're too close to me, so can you scoot back? If you get an attitude about that, then my mind clicks to something else. So whatever you want to do, I want to do. You know, and I'm very cold-hearted when I think that somebody's being disrespectful to me, and that's the message I try to tell people. Like somebody who went to prison and somebody who was in war, they had the same mental capacity. They had the same post-traumatic stress syndrome, because most people don't think about they could be killed. For 6 years, I was in a place that every day it was a chance that somebody could kill me, every single day. It wasn't a far thought. It was like, it was very close to my vest that I was like, hey man, you can get in a situation where you can either kill somebody or be killed protecting yourself. You know?
That's real.
Because of something that you don't have any clue that's even going on. Yeah. You don't know what happened, what drug trade didn't go well, or what somebody stole something and they just decided that it's going to be a ride between blacks and Mexicans over a radio, and you don't have anything to do with it, you're just outside. And so what are you going to do?
Right.
And that's the situation that I did the story. In the story I talked about CeCe. That's his story. You come to prison 1979 for 4 years, you end up in a riot, kill somebody protecting yourself, get a life sentence.
Going in mentally with 4 years.
Going in mentally.
Thinking four. Years. You get caught up in the wrong situation.
In 1979, I meet you in 1994.
Oh my god. Dude. That's crazy.
So
That's crazy.
The block that's still in your mind.
Yeah.
You know, even though I don't appear to be some prison dude. You know, that's why it took me. People don't realize this, that older new fans don't. I was on countless shows, and I never spoke about prison. The only time people ever heard me talk about prison was in 2000. They recorded BET in 1999 and 2000. I remember coming out saying, it's not even for me. This is for everybody who was incarcerated, who thought that they couldn't achieve and go when they got out.
And you said that.
I said that in 2000. And I never mentioned prison again until I did the first episode of This Is Not Happening.
Was it because you were, did you think it would hurt your career?
I thought people would try to stereotype me. That,
yeah.
That's all I had.
Sure. Man.
So,
crazy.
When they go back to 2001 to 2003 on Comic View, then they come up to who's got jokes, and they come up to the season finale on Def Jam in 08.
Right.
You know, so then the Ladies Night Out tour in 2011, my half hour special in 2016. So I never spoke about it.
No. And now we're here in 2019,
yeah.
Full circle, and you're speaking really open about it. I mean, it's out there. Now, yeah. it hasn't hurt your career.
I mean,
I don't want to say it helped your career.
Maybe
it has.
The actual show, This Is Not Happening, actually did, because it was a story that so many people could relate to.
Yeah.
With me. It's weird that Mitchell is the one that older white women come up to me and say, you should have killed Mitchell. And I'm like,
the white women tell you that?
I'm like, oh, it's always older white women. Like, they so offended. It's like they can see somebody violate them, like making them strip down for no reason. In their mind, it's not even about me no more. It's about something that happened to them, and I can tell because they're like, "You should have killed Mitchell." And I'm like, "Then you wouldn't have heard the story."
Yeah, well, You're right. They're relating it to something on a smaller scale in their own life, probably.
In their own life,
and Mitchell is their whoever.
And Mitchell is their whoever.
Yeah, that's
it. And that's the that's the power of telling a story, because you never know what release it gives to someone else.
I love it, man. I love all of it. Ali Sadiq, listen, man, thank you for taking the time. I know you do a lot in your community, and you spread a lot of love. You do things with charities and everything. So from our sponsor, we're going to give you a little gift. This is from Goodness Unlimited, and they're trying to spread a little goodness in the world. And this is a t-shirt. We know you got some big muscles on you, so hopefully it fits. But this is from Goodness Unlimited. They're trying to spread some goodness out here in Phoenix, Arizona, and you're a good guy. Great comic. Thank you, man. Thanks for taking the time, man.
Thank y'all. I'm getting ready to try to adopt a block in my city, and figuring out that you have to do like 4 cleanups a year. It's pretty going to be pretty easy.
It's all right.
And,
just a block?
Yeah.
Maybe it can get bigger someday.
Man, hopefully I can do a whole street.
Kid Rock and Eminem, they want to buy all of Detroit. You might take over all of Houston one day.
Detroit is definitely purchasable.
Yeah, for sure. For sure, man. They'll pay you to take care of that. Ali, thanks a lot, my man. I appreciate it.
Bye, everybody. Finally, someone that makes me sure.